You're listening to the 24/7 podcast.
For many, the time and place of the working day has shifted, and routines are increasingly fragmented. Labour happens around the clock, in shifts spread over time zones. We are encouraged to work more productively through connectivity. Many of us feel we're working more intensively, doing more multitasking, losing the distinction between work and non-work, and diminishing our time that is shared collectively. The gig economy promised that with networked technologies we would gain control. We could work for ourselves, to our own schedules, and have greater freedom. But this has turned out to be lonely, precarious work with an algorithm as our boss. The manager of today's factories is no longer a superintendent at the gates, but a system built into the software on the same device you use for contacting your friends. Workers' rights movements focus on pulling together for the common good, sustaining shared resources such as leisure spaces, whether physical or digital, which everyone can access, as well as developing strategies to resist the privatization and depletion of those resources, is one way to address how we might support each other in the future. I'm Sarah Cook. I'm the curator of 24/7 at Somerset House, an exhibition that addresses the non-stop nature of our lives today. Over the series, we ask you to sit back, relax, to think about the world around you, and contemplate the non-stop nature of modern life.
So you're shifting and kind of slipping between the real and the imagined. It's a work that's trying to demystify popular culture, peel back the curtain a little bit and describe the conditions that exist behind the scenes and give credit where credit's due to say, look at the extraordinary talent and amazing capacity that these studios have. So my name is Liam Young and I am a designer and director, and I tell stories about the global, urban, and architectural implications of new technologies. And I work through the mediums of popular culture, things like film, video games, animation, music videos, in order to tell stories about the way that technology is changing our world. The work on show in 24/7 is a project called Renderlands. And here, we were trying to look at the consequences of the network on systems of labor. Renderlands is a fiction film and installation set within the distributed render farms and data centers of India, what we think of as contemporary Western popular culture. Things like films and video games are actually produced by an anonymous, massive workforce in places like Mumbai and Bangalore. Render Farms tells the story of one of these render farm workers in these render farms that's falling in love with the digital model of a Hollywood actress that he spends his 14 hours a day rendering and rotoscoping.
Every single tentpole film, and I would think 90% of all 3D conversion on any movie of anywhere in the world happens in this country. So, and the governments offer subsidies, then it's a big subsidy.
It's a love story, but at the same time, it's a love story produced through the very outsourcing networks that it's trying to comment on. And here, we were trying to look at the consequences of the network on systems of labor. I base my studio right now in LA, and we work a lot with the entertainment industry. And what I saw happening was that what we think of as Western culture, video games, blockbuster films, is not made in the West at all. That all these superhero blockbusters, 3D films, video games, is all being outsourced to studios in India.
There are studios in the south and in little obscure little towns in other parts of the country where there's like a 1,000-man monkey shop, just tapping pixels every day. So There's a lot of that. And it's a business model that gives people work to do, and it's employment, and yeah, you need it. And if those shops didn't exist, some of the movies being made would not be as profitable.
So these are actually the sites of contemporary cultural production in the age of the network. So Renderland is literally an exploration through the render farms, data centers, VFX and animation studios of India to try and look at the invisible systems, networks and people that play a fundamental role in the production of contemporary culture. And Renderland is probably best described as a larger research project because there's a number of pieces to it. It began with my kind of travels through these studios and meeting the workers and talking to people that run them. And Renderland is a documentary film that captures a lot of those stories, but it's also a fiction film. While we were there, we started meeting some of these workers and they started giving us some digital files that they've been collecting. Because what happens is when a studio production in the West is cancelled, all the ownership of the material goes back to the studio. So they have a whole lot of these digital objects and files that they're not able to use for anything. So we collected a whole bunch of these digital assets, and then we started stitching together, based on interviews with them, their dreams for the worlds they wish they were asked to be able to make. Rather than just being in the service of the dreams of the West, we were asking them to use these models to start to create their own dreams. And from there, we started to invent this narrative about a render farm worker that falls in love with the digital representation of a Hollywood actress that he spends 14 hours a day endlessly rotoscoping, rendering, and compositing into blockbuster films. So he creates these digital utopias from these scavenged visual effects assets. And at night, when everyone else has gone home and the fluorescent lights are switched off, he puts on his VR goggles and wanders hand in hand with this digital reconstruction of a Hollywood actress living out this Los Angeles dream. Because, of course, you know, the worlds that they're rendering, they never physically would ever have access to. They're not going to go on a tour of LA to see the sites that they're laboring over. But this is a form of remote access, living out one's fantasies in a utopia that exists in the thickness of the screen.
We do all the things that you see in a game. It could be environments, it could be props, it could be characters, it could be vehicles, it could be the animation of the characters that you see in a game. All of these things are coming under the under content creation, and that's what we do. So there are instances where you would see levels after levels in a game which is entirely built out of Bangalore.
In a way, what's interesting is that the worlds that the render farm workers ended up creating were almost exaggerations of cliched movie moments. Because for the most part, a city like LA has been blown up so many times. It's been flooded. It's been torn apart by earthquakes. This is so often the setting for these stories. And of course, the render farm workers have never literally physically accessed this city. So their experience of it is through the films that are being made and constructed of it. So in a way, it's a form of Chinese whispers, where LA is made by one render studio in one film, and then that's watched by everyone else who works in the industry, and then they make theirs, and it becomes this exaggeration of itself. So a lot of the scenes are these kind of timeless movie moments that are being recreated. And in a way, this digital utopia that, again, exists in just this thickness of the screen is almost timeless, both in a daily 24-hour 7 cycle, but also it's eternal in the same way that the memories of iconic scenes in cinema lives on and on. You know, so some of them are these iconic moments, like there's one scene in Renderland that's constructed from digital city assets that we organized as like a lover's lane lookout. So the render farm worker and his Hollywood actress lie on the bonnet of a car which was made for a video game, a driving video game that was never made, and they look out over the twinkling lights of the city. seeing it unfold and the night of the city unfold in front of them. And again, it's a recurring dreamlike image that we see in movies over and over and over again. And for a lot of these workers, that's their experience of the world. So our film drifts back and forth between real footage, almost documentary footage that we've collected in these render farm studios that are all dimly lit. You know, the only light in these buildings comes from the glow of the screen, like this kind of rectangular screen aurora through these cubicled office spaces. And then we cut that with these super glossy, really luscious rendered images of these digital imaginaries that we asked the render farm workers to help us produce. So you're shifting and kind of slipping between the real and the imagined, to the point where the distinctions between the two are kind of arbitrary. You know, even the office spaces are shut off from the outside world. They don't have windows because that will add glare to the screen. Most of the time they're working on strange time cycles because their clients and commissioners are across the other side of the world, so they live really, really weird hours that are very different to the movements of the city around them that they're actually living in. So they're in these strange little fictional bubbles of time and space, producing these strange little fictional bubbles of time and space. So that's why in both films, the documentary and the fiction, we're always sliding between these two conditions, really to say that they're one and the same. For us, fiction is this extraordinary shared language. And stories are the mediums through which our culture shares and disseminates ideas. So we use fictions and we embed within them Trojan horses of these critical ideas as a means to connect broader audiences that wouldn't necessarily go to a show like 24/7 to these ideas. So we were trying to talk to people that would go and see Avengers Endgame.
The world has changed.
Or the new Spider-Man movie.
You're a very difficult person to contact.
Spider-Man?
That wouldn't go to the sorts of shows or festivals that my work would normally be in. And we wanted to connect them to the systems through which their favourite movies are actually made. So we used the form of the love story as a really accessible way to start to get into this subject matter. So, like, yeah, we see this love story between a worker and a digital ghost. But at the same time, we're trying to have a conversation around outsourced labor and the politics of the network and the invisible infrastructure that lies behind the scenes of contemporary culture. And yes, it still works as a love story, I hope, but at the same time, it's trying to take a critical look at all of these other infrastructural systems as well. What we're seeing is that outsourcing has so often been used as a way of getting around workers' rights and legislated labor conditions. You know, so all of these projects that are being made in these render farms, most of them originate in the States. A lot of the workers that we spoke to, they live on totally different time cycles. Although they might be working in Bangalore, they're living on West Coast United States time. And it totally puts them out of sync with the systems and cultures of the city around them. They exist in this little bubble in the office, and when they finish, they go and play video games and exist in another bubble. So it's a very strange condition, but it's a condition that global outsourcing has produced. And I think what's interesting is to start to think about how something like the formation of union structures or forms of collective action, maybe unions is a kind of an archaic model, but maybe it's kind of worker platforms where distributed workers that might be atomized and exist across the entirety of the earth actually are able to operate as some kind of collective to enforce change. Just what constitutes a union. You know, Uber is this global scaled network of freelancers, essentially. What are the new platforms that we need to build in order for those workers to operate and manage themselves with some degree of legal right? I hope that what we see through a work like Renderlands is the way that we see culture as really a condition of global production. Things aren't made in single sites anymore. Nothing is made in one point on the planet. It's all wrapped up and connected within a massive scale global network. Even something like a film, which seems quite ephemeral, is actually a global product produced through a planetary scaled megastructure that includes anonymous render farms, fiber optic cable networks, players and audiences in dispersed locations. It's a work that's trying to demystify popular culture and trying to peel back the curtain a little bit and describe the conditions that exist behind the scenes and give credit where credit's due to say, look at the extraordinary talent and amazing capacity that these studios have. Let's talk about them. Let's celebrate them. Let's give them more autonomy. Let's try and tell their story.
You've been listening to artist Liam Young. His work Renderlands can be seen in the exhibition 24/7. I'm Jonathan Reakey, director of Somerset House and co-curator of the exhibition with Sarah Cook. And now I'll leave you with the words of Jonathan Crary, author of 24/7, Late Capitalism and the Ends of Sleep. The modern factory thus emerged as an autonomous space in which the organisation of labour could be disconnected from family, community, environment, or any traditional interdependencies or associations. Thanks for listening to the 24/7 podcast. The exhibition attempts to make more sense of our non-stop, hyperactive world. It asks us to collectively rethink the way we live, work, and rest, our relationship to time, to technology, and perhaps most importantly, to one another and the world around us. It interrogates the culture of our modern lives, where we're working more intensively, juggling too much, blurring our public and private lives, pushing the limits of our natural rhythms of sleep and waking.
I want my time back.